Davidson. I like this Davidson.
It's the Bottom Line Podcast.
With your host,
Davidson Baker.
And we're live. Welcome to episode number 34 of the Bottom Line Podcast. It is the 14th edition of the MMA Tailored Bottom Line Podcast. If you don't know, where the hell have you been, man? But at least now you do if you've joined us. My name is Davidson Baker, and I am the host of this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope you appreciate what we have in store for you today. I'm joined by a good friend of mine all the way from across the pond. I have this weird knack for attracting guys from the UK that love to talk fights with me, obviously with Scott and the Yank podcast debuting last week. But without further ado, I'm joined by my good pal, the host of the Martial Arts Chat podcast, and one of the best primary school teachers this side of Scotland, my man John McElroy. How we doing today, man? You just get home?
DV, my man. Yeah, it's 9:30 in the PM here. Yeah, just getting home. Long day, man. Rolling at the glorious Scottish hit squad this morning. Yeah, doing my ABCs, 1, 2, 3s in the evening and the afternoon, and then spending my favorite part of the day talking to you, my friend, breaking down some UFC fights.
And for those of you who have never like come across the Martial Arts Chat, for those in my audience that never have, I feature on that from time to time. There's a lot of really awesome guys that are a part of the round table that he's put together. We do that. I think the last time I was on it was for UFC 226. Maybe give the listeners a pointer to where to check out your podcast as well.
Sure, man. Thanks, brother. We're, I guess all over on all the platforms, Speaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube. And best thing to do is just follow us on social media. Twitter at Martial Arts Chat, same for Facebook as well. But yeah, we do live roundtables almost every Sunday, and having good guys like yourselves and other people in the MMA media game, and yeah, just shooting the shit, man, talking what we love, utter violence inside the cage.
Lots and lots of violence. Crazy too, small world. Lined up Mr. Kevin Jones and I had a good time talking to him, and he's from, I'm not located in the same area like he is now, but I'm from kind of the, not the same, but close to the neck of the woods. Let's just say our favorite colleges are rival schools. So.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah. So without further ado, we are here to talk some fights, and UFC Lincoln is coming back this Saturday. Man, like these 3 week breaks, August 4th was UFC 227. And obviously with the double dip of title fights we had at the top of that bill, man, it's I'm starting to foam at the mouth a little bit, man. Like, what do you think? Do you like these like spread out like 3 week wait times? You know, we had Bellator last Friday, and there was a lot of action in that. But you know, 3 weeks.
I mean, yeah, it does feel like a long time when you're used to like back to back weeks, and yeah, not just the UFC. This, you know, like you said, Bellator making noise now, and I don't know, man, though, because there was for a time there just before I think Zuffa made the sale where it was every single week there was a card on, and I mean, don't get me wrong, man, I love me some MMA, but yeah, it is nice to have a little break from it. I'm just having a moan, I guess. I'm moaning when there's not one week to week, and then when there is one week to week, I'm like, oh man, this is oversaturation. You know what I mean? But yeah. Definitely salivating like you, man. Thirsty for seeing some fights, and it looks good, man. Definitely a great main event. We've got Scotland's own Joanne Calderwood on it. I'm sure we'll get to all these in a second, but yeah, I like the look of this card on paper.
And we're definitely going to get to Scotland's own Joanne Calderwood to a point. You know, this. If you've become accustomed to listening to my podcast, I would first employ for you to get a life. No, I'm just kidding, but you would know that. A lot of my podcasts, whether it's on MMA or on sports, kind of tailor to a theme, and this one is no different. We're going to be talking strictly UFC Lincoln. If you want to check out my takes on any recent news in MMA or my Bellator 204 recap, that'll be on my previous episode. But we are now in the present, and let's talk UFC Lincoln, man. It's going to take place on Saturday. And I got to say, I remember when they first announced this card, where when it was going, or whenever we first became knowledgeable of the fact that the UFC was coming to Lincoln, Nebraska. It was the UFC 223 broadcast. They're doing like the big like schedule for the upcoming summer, and you look, you're like, okay, yeah, we're going there, Chicago for UFC, and you're like, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right, really? Is it not on the map? No, is it not? So you may clue me up.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not the most premier megalopolis that America has to offer. It's a good college town, though.
Yeah.
Big arena, the Pinnacle Bank Arena is where these fights are going to take place, the home of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And the card isn't the most stacked on paper, especially compared to a couple other fight nights that we have coming up here. Like, I know the UFC Denver card is going to be spectacular. There was a new fight actually just broke for the UFC's debut in Argentina as well. Mutachi Ferreira and Tom Breeze.
I haven't seen these. So these got announced today, right?
This was reported today by our good friends over at Combate. Rafa Mourinho said or reported that Mutachi Ferreira and Tom Breeze will fight at the debut in Argentina in November. But if I could just say about Tom Breeze real quick before we dive into this Lincoln card, how the hell did that guy ever make 170 pounds?
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of that, right? When you look at people, I was interviewing Cage Warriors in 86 coming up in Liverpool, Paddy Pimlet headlines, and there's a guy I followed from Lee Chadwick, the butcher, Lee Chadwick, who's like massive. Honestly, like DB, if you saw this guy, you would think, well, he's clearly a heavyweight and he's a middleweight, and you look at him going, but how in the hell do you make 185? Because he's just thick, like everywhere. Everything's just like got muscles in places I've not even got places, and it's just like, really, dude? Like, you're cutting down to that kind of weight. Yeah, sometimes you just, MMA, man, they're just built and made genetically differently from us average mortals, I guess. It's pretty ridiculous, isn't it?
You know, yeah. Because I'm watching Tom Breeze in his fight at Liverpool, right, when he fought Dan Kelly. And I'm looking at the size discrepancy, and, you know, we're talking about Dan Kelly, a guy that was, you know, an Olympian in judo.
Judo, yeah.
A big presence across from him. And then this guy, Tom Breeze, just coming in like, five, four, four. One uppercut, man.
Game over.
That fight was announced today. I think they only have three fights for that. There was a... did you watch any of Tough? Like, much of Tough from last year?
It's been a while since I've tuned into a Tough, I've got to be honest, man. What was the last one I tuned into? Probably Faber and Conor McGregor. Look at me, fanboying.
Hey, that was a hell of a season, though, man.
No, it's hilarious, though. The back and forth between those two.
And
the fights on it were class as well, man. There were some cracking scraps.
Oh, absolutely.
And so Rogers, come on.
That's an entirely different conversation in and of itself, but how you believe and come to find out that the Mystic Mac character really is, you know, in no way, shape, or means falsified is when TJ Dillashaw walks in the Ultimate Fighter gym and Conor McGregor's like, there's a little snake in the grass. There's a little snake in the grass right there. He's got Dwayne with him.
Yeah, man, he was right along, wasn't he?
That's crazy, man. So let's talk these fights upcoming on Saturday night. When the card kind of took place, you know, obviously the original headliner was Justin Gaethje and Ally Aquinta. And, you know, we could write a novel if we sit here all day and talk about reasons Ally Aquinta doesn't want to fight. But nonetheless, James Vick is the receiving party of that short notice. I wouldn't really call it short notice, though, because he was originally supposed to fight Felder in Boise, and now he finds himself here in his first main event.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's not like he's underprepared or anything, but what a run, man, James Vick's been on. Holy moly. The first time I actually saw him was his only loss. That was the first time I actually laid eyes on him.
Against Dariush.
Dariush, yeah. Was it the first round he got finished there? But, yeah, I mean, before then, and you know, obviously after then as well. I mean, Joe Duffy was spectacular. Mm-hmm. Abel Trujillo, but you could argue he's on the downward side. I mean, this guy's. I'm a sucker for momentum, right? And as much as I love me some Gaethje, I mean, that guy's wild. He's as wild as it gets, and I love his style and I love watching his fights. But me, like I said, being the momentum counts for so much in this game. I don't know if you want the predictions on the show, mate, but it's James Vick all day long, man. This is his fight. I believe this is his time, and 31, he's in his prime, man. He's he's ready to take a W here. I can just, I can't envision it any other way than Vic, you know, takes this and then starts knocking on the door of this obscure title picture we've got at 155. But yeah, he's right in the mix after a W here for sure. And I think it's his time. I think he gets it done.
For sure. Yeah. I think that I agree with about 80 to 85% of the things that you're saying there. I do have a little bit of skepticisms with how James Vick matches up from a stylistic standpoint. And we will get to predictions to answer your question as well. We will leave room for predictions towards the end. And I have pretty much all of my, I have all of mine for the whole card. So on my podcast, my friend, what I usually do is I go main card top to bottom, and then I just kind of rapid fire with the prelims. Last time I had a guest on where we picked the whole card, I had Mr. Max Friedman. Hello, Max. I know you're probably listening to this. Of MMAtoday.com, and we did Calgary. And I beat him by one pick just because we were in agreement on most of it, but at the end, he ended up, for whatever reason, deciding to take the biggest underdog on the card, Cajun Johnson, as a, well, whatever. And, you know, dude, he just took another very, very dangerous fight.
Oh, really?
He's fighting Rustam Khabilov in Moscow.
Oh, and all of the places you could have fight him as well. Oh, God.
That card's kind of falling apart too, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know. You see, Desmond Green, really, really sad situation. He was involved in a four car pileup yesterday. Left a couple people dead. It was really, really sad. Thoughts and prayers go out to those families. But, I actually just read a report. He had some outstanding warrants out for his arrest. It doesn't look like he's going to Russia.
No, definitely no. That's not that. I mean, that's just totally scrapped altogether. But I must say that main event's really tickling my fancy. You got Mark Hunt, probably one of my favorite fighters of all time. Definitely heavyweight. And then this guy, what is it? The boa constrictor. Olenek.
Olenek. I think that that John Kavanaugh said it best. How are you going to Ezekiel choke a man without a neck?
Right. Well, that's
Mark doesn't have a neck.
But this guy Olenek, man, I'm so impressed because he makes it look so easy. Like, he just falls back and lets a guy mount him or whatever. He doesn't care. And I remember talking to Kyle Steele about this at Loudmouth MMA, and he was like, if it's that easy, why is everyone not doing it? And it's like, if this was a video game, this is this guy's finishing move, you know? It's crazy. Mm. This is just like, this is his repertoire.
And he's amazing. Pulling it off no gi too.
Yeah, amazing.
No, effortless, sliding the wrist underneath to where the circulation can be cut off while mounted.
Yeah.
And guys like Victor Pesta and Junior Albini, you know, find out the hard way. Once they're on top, they're like, yeah, I'm on top. I'm getting some, oh, shit, I'm trapped. What do I do? And you got to tap, man. Like, last thing I'll say, and then we're really going to hit this Lincoln card. When I was watching the Albini fight, it was just me and a buddy. We're just sitting on my couch, we're watching it, and like we both had in our heads, we were very well prepared going into that fight that this guy could pull off an Ezekiel choke while mounted, no gi. So you never know. And then whenever he kind of fell with Albini to his back into that same position, I literally stood up and almost walked away. And I said to my buddy, I was like, fight's over. He's going to get it again.
Yeah. It's incredible, and, man.
All Anik could say was, oh my God.
Yeah. His sound bites. He's taken over from Goldie in that department, isn't he? He's all about those sound bites.
I like Anik though. He's not too, you know,
Someone like that. You need the straight guy who's good at the timeouts and the, you know, the announcing the sponsors and keeping to the script and all that. You need that persona, and he's playing that role.
Absolutely. And another guy that's going to be calling the fights in Lincoln this weekend, a guy, Brennan Fitzgerald, does a phenomenal job too, if I must say so myself. I think he is tremendous. He's got Fitzgerald. The voice. Like he did, what's the last one he did? He did Liverpool. He did every other week of the Contender Series. It's usually him and Paul Felder. Brendan Fitzgerald here.
So he did Liverpool. I thought that was Hardy and Dan Hardy and John Gooden, no?
John Gooden was actually expecting his first child, and Fitzgerald got the call for that one. From an interview that Gooden did with Submission Radio, though, Gooden, that was not his choice. He said that he wouldn't have missed the Liverpool, you know, debut for the world. And obviously, the aforementioned Cage Warriors aspect of things earlier with Paddy Pimblett possibly being in the UFC, you know, could, maybe in a matter of months, they'll probably be back in Liverpool probably in no time. I'd imagine Gooden will be on the call next. Like, what? He got maybe Moscow. Yeah, probably.
Oh, I would imagine so. Most European cards, he's your man. So congratulations to my man, John Gooden. I had no idea. I wonder how long until that little baby's going to be doing marathons, man. He's all about those half marathons, full marathons. I don't know if you follow on social media. He's just like, that guy's marathoned out his nut. Vegan marathons, that's his lifestyle. He's all on that, man. He's all on that. He's crazy.
Man, yeah. I think Gooden does a tremendous job too. But Brendan Fitzgerald also done a great job. He'll be on the cards this weekend. Let me just ask you real quick. When this card, when you take a look at this card from top to bottom, from main card to fight past prelims, As I've you know, previously mentioned, it's not a card that's going to make you jump out of your seat by any stretch of the imagination, but there are multiple fights that are just super intriguing to me. Do you have maybe one or two fights where you look at this card from top to bottom, where you look at it and be like, that one interests me, maybe more so than others?
Let me just skim through it. So, like, ones that stick out, Mickey Gall and George Sullivan. Yeah. I just want to see how Mickey Gall performs, you know, off the back of, I guess it was his first defeat, right? So, interesting, maybe not for, I know what you're saying, not names and lights, like matchup.
Take a look at this.
Go for it.
I can share my screen. I got the whole card right here.
There you go.
Can you see my screen?
I got you. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, if you're looking at, like, it's not as, like you said, it's not, wow, look at these names on this card. It's not got that kind of feel. But interesting, Brian Barberina, Jake Ellenberger, look at that. I mean, that's going to be Courtney Casey, Angela Hill. That's going to be a great fight. Michael Johnson, questions at featherweight. You know, how does
big
he
fight for both of those girls, by the way?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, Courtney Casey and Angela. I'm a big fan of Angela Hill, man. I like seeing how she performs. Worley Alvarez, James Krause. So, I mean, like,
yeah,
there's interest
in that.
Styles make fights, that's what they always say, right? And there's a lot of, like, you know, contrasting styles I can see in these fights. I don't know too much about Joanne's opponent here. I like that she's at flyweight, though. I like that she's at 125 for this, so I'm hoping that Mofo Jojo
Kalindra Faria was actually so when the UFC introduced the women's flyweight division, and outside of, I don't know, a lot of people aren't going to remember, they had that one years before here. I'm going to, okay, back to my face now. Fiddle, give me the, there we go. Nope. There we go. Before the UFC flyweight, women's flyweight division kind of got the wheels turning, a lot of people forget there was a random instance where Joanne Calderwood and, I believe it was Valerie Letourneau.
Oh yeah, that was a best performance.
Fight. Yeah. That fight was at 125 before the division was even a thing.
Yeah, that's right.
But other than that, the first UFC women's flyweight fight was supposed to be Mauro Romero Barella versus I always get Andrea Lee and Angela Lee mixed up. Andrea Lee, the one with the crazy Nazi husband that's got a warrant arrest out for him.
But I don't know anything about that. Really?
Really? You remember the UFC Chile, the fight of the night at UFC Chile, Angela Lee and Veronica Macedo? Okay, so the girl that won that fight, Angela Lee, it's Andrea Lee. Angela Lee fights in one championship.
Ms. Lee, yeah, there you go.
Andrea Lee, there was all this controversy a couple months ago with her husband. He had a bunch of Nazi tattoos that he, quote-unquote, like, had to get while he was in prison. Which,
like,
I mean,
American,
like,
SX, like that kind of kick,
right? It, like, joining, like, Brotherhood and shit. But
Jesus,
whenever, like, people would ask him if he would get them removed, like, he had all these excuses. I don't know, just not really like the most respected figure in the world of MMA. And then a couple of days ago, like, word came out that the police were called to, because he's married to Andrea, and The police were called to their house over a domestic dispute, and he got violent with her, and he's her coach. So it's not like he's picking a fight with a skilled fighter. He's the one that trains her. Anyway,
Jesus,
Andrea Lee was supposed to be a part of the UFC's first women's flyweight fight since the introduction of the weight class. She had to pull out. The girl Joanne Calder was fighting, Kalindra Faria, filled in on short notice and got choked out in the first round. Then she dropped a split decision to Jessica Ai in St. Louis in January. So she's 0-2, fighting against Joanne Calderwood. I'm no genius, but if you ask me, go to 0-3. That's probably sayonara.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually how it works in the UFC, right? Unless you're someone like John Fitch and you maybe lose one fight and Dana doesn't like you and you get cut. But yeah, 0-3 would definitely signal the end. I don't know what, if that's the case then, I don't know what a victory does for Joanne here. I would like to have seen her possibly matched up with, going by what you're saying in the record, I would like to have seen her matched up with a more challenging opponent. But maybe just get, because I know she's changed camp. She was originally here in Scotland. She moved to TriStar. Right. As far as I know, she's not doing the thing with Verasa Habi anymore. She's training in one of the UFC gyms or something now. So we'll just, it's another era in JoJo's life, and just need to see how that pans out, I guess.
Yeah, Joanne Calderwood, you know, she's not really an open book per se in interviews. You know, when you're in the world of MMA and you see these different personas kind of shed their face in the limelight from time to time, you can kind of get the notion of who is an open book and who is kind of a closed diary. She would be the latter form, but man, she opens up to Ariel Helwani every time that she talks to him, and she told him all about, you know, the TriStar debacle, and it wasn't really a debacle. Is just like, you know, TriStar is, from what I understand, obviously because I've never been there, I've never seen it firsthand, but TriStar is and always has been very centralized and focused around the overall betterment of the guy. Obviously, the guy for many years was George St. Pierre, and the predecessor was supposed to be Rory McDonald, and in a sense, still could be. But all that being said, there also was not a lot of women for her to train with there, like at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we'll get to Joanne, and I have some ideas of who I think she could fight. And especially one thing I will say before we move back up and talk about the main event a little bit, Joanne Calderwood in a division like women's flyweight, where it's still brand new, it's not even a year old. One win puts you not exactly like in the thick of things, but one win, and especially like a finish or an impressive performance, will put you right in the conversation to get probably a top 10, you know, fight of that. More than half of the top 15 has only one fight in the division.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if she performs impressively, you never know too with these rankings, she might end up with a number next to her name in the flyweight rankings next week. But without further ado, let's talk about the main event. Justin Gaethje and James Vick, obviously. So Justin Gaethje makes it now 4-for-4 on card placement or ideal card placement scenarios. You got the debut in the main event with Michael Johnson, then the Ultimate Fighter show with Alvarez, headlines on Fox against Poirier, and now here we are again, headlining in the middle of America against James Vick. What do you think? You obviously kind of shed some light on what you think about the fight a little bit ago. From the adverse view of things, what do you see being the key to if Justin Gaethje is going to get his hand raised?
He knows no other way than just to pressure forward, leg kicks, overhand, right? I mean, he's just, I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony because he's not. But he's too tough for his own good, and he banks on himself, or he banks on that getting the keys to victory, and he's well aware of the consequences. I think, in fact, I'm sure that before the Johnson fight, like when he was debuting in the UFC, he was like, "Look, it's only a matter of time until someone knocks me out." So he was well aware of, you know, the dangers his style, you know, the threats that it possesses, but also aware of the danger that could, you know, that could cause them. It's a help and it's a hindrance, really, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. He's just got to do it, and I know, it sounds like I'm saying he's got to throw shit at the wall and see what sticks. But in some
kind of
form or fashion, that's it, right? That's exactly what he's got to do. He's got to just play his game and then hope that it pays off. And you know, it almost paid off against Eddie Alvarez, and it did pay off against Michael Johnson. It was back and forth. He was rocked several times in that fight, but
it really almost paid off against Poirier too.
Sure. Yeah. Right. He knows no other style, and he's just got to just keep going with that, I guess. I mean, there is no other way. He's not going to suddenly be pulling guard and you know, throwing up all these different submissions. You know what I mean? He's not going to turn into Damian Maia or anything like that. So pressure, strikes, especially he loves that leg kick, doesn't he?
I could make a very cohesive case that Justin Gaethje is one of the most deadly leg kickers in the history of the sport. I'm not talking right now. I'm talking like ever.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. He can finish people with leg kicks. We've seen that before. We've seen it with the likes of Barbosa. You know, they put so much torque into it. There's just the whole hip that's followed through. Everything's into that kick.
But what's weird with Gaethje is like he throws that shit kind of like while he's inside the pocket. Unlike, you know, Barbosa, where he's trying to stay and keep his distance and hammer your legs from far away, Gaethje will literally throw leg kicks while in the clinch.
Oh, yeah. He likes, that's the kind of area he likes to be in. Yeah, you're right about Barbosa. He's doing it and keeping the distance. Gaethje will do it and maybe follow up with something or, like, put punches on the end of his kicks. So it's not just the leg kicks that is coming, although it can be too. But, yeah, he's in that... He's in that range of the dirty boxing range. That's where he excels, and that's where he puts himself at a massive risk, man. It's a gamble. It's a total gamble to get him to win.
It is a gamble, man. And to be honest with you, what tells me the story in bunches, I'm pulling up the official metric of it right now. What told me the greater portion of the story with Justin Gaethje as a fighter, not in any specific instance or whereabouts or whose situation. What told me more than anything else about Justin Gaethje as a fighter was in between rounds 1 and 2 against Poirier. When you're watching it on Fox in the States, they don't have corner audio in between rounds because they got to go to commercial. Right. But when I watched the fight back, because like that's one of those fights that I had such a great time watching. The day that it became available on Fight Pass, I ran it back. And I noticed in between rounds after, may I mind you, Dustin Poirier had just landed 63 significant strikes on Mr. Gaethje in one round. Gaethje goes to Whitman in his corner. He goes, do we think I won that round? And Whitman kind of looks at him like he's like nuts. Like Whitman kind of looks at him like, yeah. And he goes, doesn't matter. You're going to break him anyway. And Gaethje's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. He's not playing for any decision, then, you know, that's his style.
Dude, does it seem like he kind of like was seeing the light for a second? Because he's an NCAA Division I wrestler, man. He could have his way with guys on the ground, and he just wants to have wars.
Yeah. He's the highlight, the highlight reel, whatever his nickname is. Yeah, he's living the gimmick. If this is pro wrestling, he's living the gimmick, right? That's just what he's all about. Good for him, man. I love it. We all love it. Who doesn't love watching Justin Gaethje fight? You know what I mean?
It is good for him, and I do love it. It as a person, though, if you knew him personally and like you considered him a close friend, what do you think it would take? Let's say Gaethje goes out there and we have another fight of the year candidate once again in an absolute back and forth slugfest, and Vic just barely edges him out. What do you think it's going to take for someone in his corner to kind of be like, dog, you wrestled for free college at a Division I institution. Why do you not use that?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone can have that conversation with him. He's wrapped up in own self. And like I said, man, it's a help, but it's also a hindrance. And that time will come. It sounds like there's a tragedy going to come. I mean, God, I hope not. But with that kind of style, man, it's going to be glorious victory or glorious failure, isn't it? It's one way or the other.
And but, maybe glory is all that matters, man. I love it too, bro, to be honest.
Can't not love it.
No. So let's look at it from both of these guys' perspective, and we'll move on to the co-main event. Let's say, hypothetically, Justin Gaethje gets his hand raised.
Mm.
Justin Gaethje will, as I said previously, have the three fights that he did with the main event in his debut against Michael Johnson, the Ultimate Fighter casting with Eddie Alvarez on the main card of a pay-per-view, and then the Poirier fight on Big Fox, and now this main event. So three out of his first four UFC fights being main events. Mm-hmm. And let's say Gaethje gets his hand raised and improves to 2-2 inside the octagon and keeps himself right kind of in the thick of things inside the top 10 at lightweight. Looking back on his first four fights, Johnson, Alvarez, Poirier, and Vic, if he were to get his hand raised, how would you initially describe Gaethje's first four fights in the UFC if he comes out of it 2-2?
Oh, if he walks away with a W, phenomenal. I mean, Justin Gaethje's a peculiar one because look at what we've spoken about with him. It's not like we're talking about, although you did bring it up, but what we're ultimately talking about is performance, you know, the glory and all the rest of it. So W's or L's, it's almost like they're inconsequential when you describe a man like Justin Gaethje. You know, like what you're remembering for is, did he get his hand raised or did he not? As I mean, I suppose it does count for something. Of course it does. When 50K
counts for something too.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Yeah. 50 G's goes a long way. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question, Blake, how do you assess him? Win, lose, or draw, he's of the modern era of MMA. He's one of the greats. You know what I mean? He's probably the most exciting fighter style wise since, I don't know, Diego Sanchez springs to mind. You know that crazy, crazy style. But it's not crazy and wild. But it is. You know, it's wild. But like you said, he's got the wrestling background. He's not just a guy like how many times you hear Goldberg going rock 'em, sock 'em, robots. I mean, he does have that style. But has legitimacy behind him as well. He's a complete martial artist. He loves the brawl. He loves the bang. I love the bang, bro. And it's how would you assess him, man? He's golden. He's golden, man.
Yeah, man. I would say if Justin Gaethje were to come out, if Justin Gaethje, I'm gonna see how quickly I'm gonna see how quickly I can get this stat added up in my head. So. We got 174 significant strikes dealt to him against Poirier.
Jesus.
We have 155 significant strikes dealt to him from Alvarez. So you do the math, 274, 329. And then obviously he took a lick. He took a lick against Johnson too. It's 320. Oh, only 91. Well, I mean, that fight ended early. Yeah,
only.
So we're looking at roughly 400 or so significant strikes that he has been dealt.
Yeah.
Before even walking into the octagon.
Well, that's it. That's what I was going to say. That's just in the fights. What about the sparring? I mean, you've got to imagine that guy spars hard. He's not going light. You know what I mean? Like, that's 400. Inside the octagon and the rest, you know, in and around training camps and Christ, man, you're probably talking in the thousands, right?
Did you know that fight didn't even win fight of the night? His fight with Michael Johnson, he won performance. Oh, really? Of the night. Yeah, I'm looking at
who won fight of the night.
Trying to see. That was the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale. They, oh wow. So they won fight of the night and he won performance of the night. So he took home 100K.
Good for you, Gaethje. Quite right. Yeah, because we did our end of year award show and that was the fight of the year. That's what we
that was my fight of the year as well.
Yeah, man. That's what we were votes for Alvarez and there was votes for what was the one? Your man from Hawaii. Sorry, sometimes the names escape me. Yancy Medeiros and
Cowboy Oliveira.
That's the one. Yeah. So that was in there as well. But yeah, we gave it to Johnson Gaethje. But I mean, Gaethje, insert name here, would have done, you know what I mean?
Totally, bro. Totally. And that fight and Gaethje Alvarez were both at UFC 218, which I was in attendance for. It was pretty nuts. And like the Overeem and Ngannou cardboard stiffening was there too. It was a crazy event. So moving on to talk about James Vick. You know, a guy like James Vick, who is not a lightweight, if we're going to be honest with you, dude is huge. What do we see potentially in the cards for him if he were to get his hand raised? Because I'm just like you, and we'll go through predictions towards the end. I'm all in on James Vick in this matchup for a number of reasons. But, you know, he's been saying in pressers, he's been saying in interviews, look, once I get my hand raised, it's no more bullshit. I'm ready to call some people out. Yeah. Who do you think's on the tip of his tongue? I got a couple of ideas.
He's in the mix if he gets the W, which I suspect he will. You got to look at who's in that picture: Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee. Those are names that come to mind.
Come to mind immediately.
Yeah, it's that top five region. You know what I mean? He's right in that mix. That perennial, you know, title contender. That's where that's the next level for him for sure. Top five, I guess.
And if he would improve to 10-1 in the UFC lightweight division, I mean,
10-1, wow.
10-1 in what my opinion is there's a difference between the deepest and the most stacked with talent. And I think the UFC's lightweight division is the most stacked with talent. I would say welterweight is probably the deepest, but like once you get to the top 20-25 guys at lightweight, they're all killers, literally all of them.
There's no easy fights. I mean, even people that are, you know, coming in and out, the likes of Khabib, McGregor, Diaz, all these guys are monsters.
Like Gregor Gillespie doesn't hasn't fought a ranked opponent at all, and I don't think I've ever seen Gregor Gillespie in any type of adversity for a second. And that guy hasn't even fought a ranked opponent yet.
Right, exactly. So yeah, there you go. Tells you exactly all you need to know about 155, right?
Yeah, it really does. So getting ready to move on to the co-main event. Is it just me, or is nobody talking about this fight at all? And Michael Johnson and Andre Feely. Weirdly enough, Michael Johnson ending up a year later from his fight with Gaethje, one half of Gaethje and Vic's co-main event. They had some bitter, bitter things to say to each other. It should be interesting, being that they're both red corner fighters too. They're going to be around each other an awful lot this week.
Yeah, it's probably just done in promo to the fight. Gaethje was making his debut. Johnson was the guy who was welcoming him to the UFC.
And you know, Johnson said some foul shit to him though, man. Like when he said to him that when he like was asking him who in his family had sex with who to create him, I was like, damn, bro. Like,
yeah,
not that
serious. Isn't that what Donald Trump calls locker room talk though? That's just like, that's just how it goes, man.
There you go, man. You know, a little bit of American culture with our president, for better or for worse. You know, this isn't a political podcast, so I won't.
I'm sorry, man. I should have went there.
No. It's not that you went there. It's just the fact that the president of my nation, when it comes to tongue, has got to be something that now us Americans are routine to deviate away from, just because they don't want to offend anybody or anything. But you know, on the topic of this fight, though, it is a very intriguing. This is one of those fights for me that I look at this card on paper, and I think there's a lot of moving parts to this fight. Michael Johnson has actually called this fight in interviews recently an absolute, a quote word for word from Michael Johnson, an absolutely must win fight for my career. He's right now pegged at -145 at American odds. Andre Feely on the comeback at +125. But Feely has had, outside of the hiccup against Calvin Kattar last summer, he's on quite a bit of a tear. Michael Johnson, the opposite. What are your initial thoughts of this co-main event?
Why is he at featherweight, though? Like, what made him decide to drop? Because usually we see guys when they get older, they go up in weight.
You're talking about Johnson?
Johnson, yeah. Why is he decided to, do we know this? Why is he went to featherweight and went down to 145?
Well, this is his second fight. This is now his second fight at featherweight, being that he made his featherweight debut back in January in St. Louis. And, you know, like every single typical Darren Elkins fight happens, Johnson was in complete control, and then he made one mistake, and Elkins capitalized and choked him out. Mm. But that being said, I mean, here's maybe a clue as to why he dropped down. Take a listen to, jeez, man. Take a listen to his last six fights in the lightweight division.
Go on.
Edson Barbosa, which he won. Benil Dariush, Nate Diaz, which that fight with Diaz was where the whole Conor McGregor, you're taking everything I work for, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Then he knocked out Poirier, and that was the last time Poirier's lost.
That was good. That was a good fight.
Then Khabib.
Oh, mauled.
And then Gaethje. So Barbosa, Dariush, Diaz, Poirier, Khabib, Gaethje were his last six fights at lightweight. I mean,
nice easy fights. Exactly, right?
He went 2-4 in those, and I mean, that's
almost good.
respectable. Yeah, and the Edson Barbosa fight was a four-fight winning streak. He lost the fight to Dariush by split decision, and obviously he could have won the Gaethje fight, tagged Khabib. He was in control with Elkins. He has, though, on paper, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's lost five of his last six, and this will be his fourth loss in a row if he can't turn the tables around against another Team Alpha Male featherweight in Andre Touchy Feely.
Touchy Feely. I love that nickname, Touchy Feely.
I do, too, man. This is, once again, I interviewed Josh Emmett the other day, and he gave me an interesting perspective on account of these Team Alpha Male guys that have all of these training partners that all fight under the same promotional banner that get these same matchups that their teammates have already had, and how it helps them immensely.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And Andre Feely, he said that they kind of, and I've seen in documentaries and videographies before that these guys just literally bunk up at another one's house. Cause Team Alpha Male is a brotherhood. And they just bunk up at another one's house, and they'll share knowledge, share information, and share tendencies. And everything kind of adding up right now, despite Michael Johnson being the favorite. I'm not the biggest fan of taking him in this matchup, to be honest with you. I'm really not.
Yeah, I don't know where he goes from here other than out of the UFC. And it'd be a shame to see, because I do like Michael Johnson. I do like his style. That victory over Poirier, man, I forgot all about that. That was glorious. I don't think anyone saw that coming. He must have been a dog in that fight, right?
Ooh, he knocked him out cold. You asked if he was the underdog?
Must have been, right? He must have been. Because Poirier was on a good hot streak at that point as well, I'm sure.
He was a slight underdog, plus 150, so just barely.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't think anyone really saw that coming. I remember at the time, I'm sure we did a prediction show, and everybody was calling for Poirier, and Poirier obviously went on to do what he's doing now, and he's knocking on the door of the title. But back to Michael Johnson. I mean, I don't know. It does seem like he's on a downward slide, right? How old is Michael Johnson now? I want to see, like, 32.
Michael 33. Johnson is 32 years young.
32 years young. You're moving down to featherweight, which is a peculiar one, and you're coming off a couple of losses there. I can see why it's must win for him, for sure. Is it must win and a great performance he needs, though? I don't know.
No, to be honest with you, in this case, man, where you've got the track record that you have in your most recent activity, and like I said, a six-fight stretch that went, okay, here's Barbosa. Okay, here's Dariush. Okay, here's Diaz. Here's Poirier. Here's Khabib. Have fun. and obviously, you know, having the war with Gaethje that almost went his way. And with Michael Johnson, man, six fights ago, he was 8-3 in the UFC. And now he finds himself at 9-9 in the UFC. I think the definite agenda for Henry Hooft and those guys in that camp has got to be do whatever it takes to get your hand raised at the end of the day. Look impressive on another day, but in terms of
just saving, get the W.
Dude, yeah, man. I mean, you could be saving your spot on the roster. It doesn't matter if you're Michael Johnson or not. Losing six out of seven And then he would drop to under 500 in the UFC. I don't know if they'll cut him. Do you think they would cut him? It'd be his fourth loss in a row, sixth out of seven. 17-14 is what he would drop to as a professional with one of the toughest, you know, track records in all of MMA. But, you know,
and one of the, what, like you said as well, and one of the deepest and stacked divisions in the UFC. Oh, well, no, beg your pardon, I'll be at featherweight, excuse me. Would they cut him? Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Potentially, yes.
They don't need featherweights. They don't need featherweights at all.
We got plenty of other guys who could step in. Man, I hope not. I like Michael Johnson. I'm not too keen on Henry Hooft. Why is he always calling for his fighters not to quit? That's the worst advice ever. You ever heard him say that?
Don't give up. That's what the worst corner advice, bro.
Yeah, I don't want to tell the guy how to do his job, but for Christ's sake, don't give up.
You know,
so the other guy can hear you, right?
I'm so I'm like guys, their plan is to not give up. What do we do? And to be honest with you, adversely, I think that might throw a wrench into Justin Gaethje's camp, to be honest with you. They hear he's not going to give up, and they're all like, oh, fuck, what do we do now, bro? But, yeah, no, that's a good point. I think Henry Hooft is one of the most respected and well-versed striking and kickboxing, particularly coaches in MMA. But as far as corner advice is concerned, yeah, they definitely do leave a little bit to be desired in the Black Zillion camp.
Public speaking, I don't think he's got a career in that later on. You know, motivational speaking, I don't think for him.
Because I am very tall and I talk like this. What are you doing? He's catching you with the right hand.
Don't give up, Mikey. Don't give up. AJ, don't give up.
Like Cejudo's,
everybody.
Cejudo's corner, I about flipped my fucking lid when I was watching the main card at UFC 227. And Cejudo's corner, right, going into the fifth round. This is arguably the most important round in the history of the division, let alone of your career, let alone of the future of your career. This is the most important round, being that a lot of people had it tied 2-2, of that entire flyweight division's history. And they tell him, put him on his ass. Let's go. You got this. I'm sitting there like, dog, that's what you tell your guy? Really? That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up about the corner of Michael Johnson. There won't be any of that in the Team Alpha Male corner. Again, I really like Andre Feely in that matchup. But let's kind of hit the rest of these fights on this card, kind of bang bang, now that we've covered the main event and co-main event in a little bit of depth. Courtney Casey and Angela Hill. My take on this fight, really, on the surface of things, and going down the rest of this card, since there's not a lot of, you know, big time firepower left, you know, it's kind of just going to be a couple of thoughts and move on to the next one. Courtney Casey, off of a very controversial and, in my opinion, not deserved split decision loss to Michelle Waterson at the Gaethje Poirier card in April. And Angela Hill has kind of just found a way, to make a solid case as a perennial roster spot in the strawweight division. What I will say, though, is this. Not only is the strawweight division in women's MMA the deepest and the best now, and there's no debate about that, that division is going to be scary good in about a year from now. There are some girls that are 1-0, 2-0 in the UFC right now coming up that are coming for those top 15 spots very, very soon. And I think the loser of this fight could end up drawing one of those killers that are in the wings.
Right.
Yeah, like, you ever heard of Pollyanna Botelho?
No. I'm not too familiar with women's strawweight. I beg your pardon.
So again, let me remind you, these are women's straw weights, 115 pounds, lightest you can go without an atom weight division. There's barely any power packed in their hands. And this girl, Pollyanna Botelho, in her last UFC fight against another undefeated fighter in Shuri Kondo, knocked her out in 40 seconds with a liver kick and punches on the ground.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah. I did see that. That video went viral. That's right. Yeah.
Dude, and like, she's like coming off that, like, Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I remember that well.
That was that division is going to have some killers, man. Like, for real. The loser in the strawweight division for me right now, you got to be winning your fights because these girls that are up and coming, they're coming. For real. And Tatiana Suarez, I think, is the head of that generation and with a lot behind them. Do you see one particular way in this fight between Casey and Hill?
Hey, well, I'm just such a fan of Hill. I guess I'm I'm a biased prick. I don't know.
I am too.
I guess so. I can't hate it. But yeah, I mean, according to Casey, obviously the first time I set eyes on her was when I was in attendance at UFC Glasgow. That was her debut show. Joanne Calderwood. She was a late replacement for was it Felice Herrig or something? I can't remember. She stepped up short notice.
Casey or Hill?
Connie Casey was when she fought Joanne. It was the first show in Scotland that UFC did.
Yeah, that ended up being fight of the night, right?
Yeah. Oh, great fight. I don't know how short a notice it was. I don't think it was that much. Beck Rawlings.
It was Beck Rawlings.
Beck Rawlings. That's who she was supposed to fight. And it was a great fight because Joanne was starting off strong, but ending the round weak, and that's what kind of made it, you know, close. But an entertaining, almost like a back and forth fight. Yeah, that's right. I think they did get the fight of the night.
I believe.
So that was the first time I've seen her, and then more recently, Watterson, Felice Herring, kind of like what we're saying with Michael Johnson. Downward slide. I'm a biased prick for Angela Hill. I'm a sucker for that. Although Hill's got momentum on her side. I think she's like win-one, lose-one. She's in that kind of rhythm of things just now. But to me, man, it's Hill's. I was going to say all day long. That's the wrong choice of phrase. It's Hill's to take, and take she will. For sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. And Courtney Casey has been the recipient of some pretty bad luck as far as the judges' scorecards are concerned, losing back-to-back fights now by split decision. So it's going to be she's only won one fight in her entire career that has gone the distance. And I think that's Angela Hill's bread and butter. I think Angela Hill's going to stay on the outside.
Good point. All right.
Courtney Casey is a large strawweight too. We say that Joanna and these girls are big for strawweight at 5'5". Courtney Casey is 5'7" with a 67-inch reach. She is massive for that division. If I'm Angela Hill, I don't want to be getting anywhere close to where Courtney Casey is at her best, that which is in the clinch and in close situations where she can try to work her ground game and muster up a submission. So, I mean, I gotta like Angela Hill in this. I think the only girl that I've ever seen kind of successfully and even was failed to become successful in their fight, her hell of a fight with Jessica Andrade.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that was a hell of a fight, and it took place on the feet for most of it. I don't think she's gonna take Angela Hill down very easily. So yeah, moving on. A potential retirement fight I've been hearing, Jake Ellenberger in the red corner for a hometown fight in what I've been reading and what I've been hearing could be his last fight, especially if he gets finished like he has been lately. He's on a pretty rough stretch as of late. And he gets the -450 favorite, Brian Barberena. What are your initial thoughts on that one?
Yeah, but Ellenberger should have called it a while ago. I don't think I think Ellenberger was. Is that right? Is he the hometown boy in this? I didn't realize. So this is his.
He's from Nebraska.
Right. Okay. So there you go. Yeah. When was the last time that Ellenberger really? I can't think of anything that comes to mind. All I think of when I think of Ellenberger now is just taking beatings.
Yeah,
Wonderboy Thompson. Remember that? That was bad.
And he's been. That was really bad. The spinning hook kick.
Yeah. I think he said spinning shit doesn't work on me or something like that prior to that fight. I'm sure he said something like that, and it's just like, oh, dude, man, it couldn't have went any worse.
He's been.
He needs to call Adi, and if he gets hometown, good for him.
Yeah, a loss in this fight will make it his he's in the same exact record statistically driven boat as Michael Johnson is, he's in danger of losing his sixth out of seven and fourth in a row, just like Johnson. So, and unlike Johnson, where Johnson's been in some close decisions, Ellenberger has been finished in his last three fights. He had, he took the knee to the solar plexus from Ben Saunders at Utica. Oh my God. The short elbow heard around the world from Mike Perry last,
Oh my God.
last April. And then, he got finished by Jorge Masvidal as well in the first round. Barbarina is a huge favorite too. I would say Ellenberger is 33. So, but if you're getting, it's his 46th professional fight too.
Exactly. If he was a car, he's got 100,000 miles on him by now, man. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
totally.
That's it.
And, moving on to, how about a clap for the UFC? We got a flyweight fight on the main card of something. And
you're a big flyweight fan, right?
I mean, I like the flyweight division. I think when you scratch the surface of it and you try to get new fans acclimated to MMA and you want to introduce someone and be like, hey, let's watch this fight, you're not going to usually dip into the archives at 125 pounds. But they're so technically sound and obviously so quick. And now, like I've been saying for now 2.5 weeks, now that Demetrius Johnson doesn't have the belt, this division has never been a hotter topic.
You're going to hate me, man. I'm not a fan of the flyweights at all. I'm sorry.
Hey, man, you know, that's the whole point of the podcast and having guests on, though. You got to have some differing views of the Fed. Tell me a little bit why, because I understand, man. A lot of people feel the way you do.
I don't know. It's not that I've got anything against them. But I know what you're saying. Like, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, do you know what it is? I get sick of so many people telling me, but he's the greatest ever. He's the greatest ever. He's the greatest ever. And I don't mean like when Dana goes, this guy is the pound for pound greatest. I don't mean that. I mean like so many people online, like he was the little darling for a while of internet MMA fan base. And it just been, it made me want to tune out. Maybe that's just me being me. I'm strange that way. But I can't think of, I can think of a handful of fights, maybe flyweight, where I go, oh man, I would like to see that back again. Like, okay, Mighty Mouse, obviously with the, you know, the suplex and the armbar, amazing, man, quality stuff.
Goodness.
Mighty Mouse's finish of Joe Benavides the second time, man, brutal. But I can't think of like back and forth wars at flyweight. I can't think of like, you're not going to get a Dan Henderson Shogun, you know what I mean? I can't think of an epic battle like that. And I really try and like a division, but a lot of the times, man, I'm sorry, I just, when there's flyweights on, I'm like, yeah, I think I'll go for a wee smoke break. I'm sorry.
Dude, no, I you would definitely not be the first to say that. However, a number that tells the tale of a lot of, you know, viewership figures is this is the first fight outside of Demetrius Johnson and Henry Cejudo, obviously being the co-main, being that it's a title fight. This is the first fight at 125 pounds in the UFC to hit a main card this calendar year.
Is that right?
I think that's no coincidence, because also what's interesting about it is this fight was not supposed to be on the main card. It was it was one of the regular prelims before Antonio Braga Neto pulled out of his fight with Andrew Sanchez. They find Marcus Perez to fill in. And then after Johnson dropped his belt, the UFC kind of just went like, we'll switch those two. Yeah, and especially when, like I said, I don't think that division on the general landscape of things has been a hotter topic than it is right now and ever maybe will be, unless we get, you know, a rotation of you know, champions instead of someone that's dominating, for because it takes the excitement of the contendership out of the equation, because, you know, you're watching this fight and they're like, oh, okay, well, they could win 8 fights in a row, but once they get to Mighty Mouse, you know, it's over with.
Exactly. And it was just like it was on a rotisserie. Okay, who's next for Mighty Mouse? You know, that was another reason that puts you off that division, especially when there was a title fight. I'm like, well, I know how this is going to go, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, But yeah, I mean, it does make things interesting. You're absolutely right. And obviously the UFC have recognized that, as you've pointed out, that they've changed things up on this card. So, and that's the smart thing to do. That's the right business matchmaking decision and all the rest of it. So am I going to tune in? I got to be honest, EB, man, I'm probably not.
There you go, man. So, one of the other, dude, you're all good, man. Like I said, a lot of people feel the same way, and that one of the divisions, brightest up and comers, Davison Figueiredo, is 14-0. He gets a contender in John Moraga. Moving on to the opener of the main card, Eric Anders is the biggest favorite on the card, top to bottom, -800 against Tim Williams. I don't really see this ending a whole lot of ways other than Eric Anders landing a shot that puts Williams on the canvas.
So this is a boy who was at middleweight that fought Machida, right? But he was undefeated until...
Correct.
This boy Anders, right?
I thought so too.
Big boy at middleweight as well, if I seem to remember right.
Brings
his presence, I'll say that.
Oh, dude.
I don't know too much about his opponent.
Tim Williams was a two-time Ultimate Fighter cast member. He actually had a... He was the middleweight champion in the Cage Fury FC promotion before he came up to the UFC, and had a title defense against a man by the name of Anthony Lionheart Smith, which he lost, and then got an immediate rematch against him and lost again. So half of his losses, this is during Anthony Smith's incredible career resurgence and stuff, but Eric Anders, I mean, a guy like Eric Anders, who in my opinion won that fight on that night in Brazil, the fact that there was a judge that thought Machida won 4 out of those 5 rounds, should be punishable by law. I mean ridiculous. And the thing about Eric Anders is he's going to be such a nightmare for the middleweight division in the future, because you could make a very comprehensive case that there is not a fighter in the UFC's middleweight division that possesses more raw and explosive athletic ability than he does. He played American football at the University of Alabama and won a national championship as one of their best players on defense at linebacker here in American football in the States, which for those that don't know, Alabama, if you play college football at Alabama, you're a completely different breed of athletic specimen. Right. And I think he should probably land a shot that knocks him out. Now that we've got to the prelims, kind of hit these bang, bang. James Krause, Warley Alves. Krause making his welterweight debut in the UFC.
So, yeah, I thought that, right? So I was like, what's he doing? Is he walking around at 170 now? What's the deal? So this is another one, though. Like, why is he making a move?
I really can't tell you, man. Yeah, and he's just kind of leaving he's won his last 4 fights, too, at 155. He's just kind of leaving that, you know, behind him. He's moving up to 170. Tough matchup for him, too. Warley Alves, tough matchup.
Oh, yeah. Alvarez is the shit. Warley Alves is the shit. James Krause, I would have done my usual and say momentum's on his side, but a different weight class and against a tough opponent, that might put a wee bump in the road. Oh, man, I don't know. I hate sitting on the fence for predictions. I'll tell you what, because we're at a new weight class and this is Warley's division, I'll go for Alves on this one. I see maybe going a decision then. If I gun in my head, then I'm going for Wally Alvarez in this one, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, if Alvarez gets a hold of your neck, that fight's over because, hold on, I'm getting a phone. Hello? Okay, all right. Yeah, they're still celebrating his submission of Colby Covington in Brazil. a lot of people forget, man, that's Colby Covington's lone L, Wally Alvarez.
That's right.
Submission.
Big time.
Yeah, man. Once he gets a hold of that neck, it's, you know, it's either tap or nap. And, you know, James Krause is more than capable of holding his own in the ground fighting area of things. But this is a tough matchup for him. A guy that's going to want to initiate the clinch early and often. A guy that's much bigger than him. You know, and again, you know, you leave a 4-fight winning streak in the dust for what? This is your matchup you get? Okay. Let's see if that pays off for him. Yeah, I agree. Bantamweights. Corey, another guy. So, yeah, the theme is kind of recurring now. You got Johnson. You got Kraus. You got Calderwood. All these fighters that are moving into new divisions. Corey Sandhagen, who made his debut at featherweight back in February. This is his first bantamweight fight since his second professional fight. Sandhagen is a top chip prospect, 8-1, 1-0 in the UFC, and he gets in his second UFC fight a veteran, Yuri Alcantara, who will be making his 46th professional appearance. Sandhagen, though, is the 2.5-1 favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I was sad when we were here. What it was the fight with Brad Pickett, and he choked out our man. But yeah, I mean, he's been around the block twice. Back, he's one of those guys, isn't he? He's just like still doing his thing, man. What was his last fight? Was the Joe Soto? Want to say?
Yeah,
I've got to go for Yuri in this one. Although I'm not too familiar with his opponent, but I'm Dog. Yeah, I think it's experienced, man. I'm getting a bit of salt and pepper in my hair now, so I've got to back my fellow guys in the 30s. Let's do it. Old dog takes it.
There you go, man. Then the fight I aforementioned with the Antonio Braga Neto pullout, Marcus Perez filled in to take on Ultimate Fighter season 24, I believe, winner Andrew Sanchez. Andrew Sanchez, man, a guy that, you know, got off to a great start in the UFC 2-0. And then caught a head kick from Lionheart Smith and was dominating his fight against Ryan James last December and was pouring it on, looking for the finish almost the entire first round. And it ended up completely depleting him. And he ended up getting finished himself. And he takes on a guy in Marcus Perez, who is just off of his first UFC win at UFC 224. This is a really even fight on paper. Oddsmakers have it at dead even. A couple of middleweights. Sanchez is going to probably try to. It's a wrestling versus BJJ matchup. When you look at the side of things, with Sanchez being the wrestler and Perez being the grappler.
When we did our end of year awards show, one of the awards was who had a year to forget, like who is a wooden spinner, like, and everybody was John Jones. And for 2017, but one of the ones that came up was Andrew Sanchez, and it was exactly for what you just said for the Ryan James fight. It was like, you know, you get the piss beat out of you after, like you said, after dominating a fight, and then you just throw that away and get your ass handed to you. So disappointing. He'll be wanting to bounce back from that, and that's why I've got to pick Sanchez in this one, man, for sure.
Dude, yeah, I think that I'm going to agree with you on that. Then moving on. Why this fight is so far down the card, I don't know. Mickey Gall, who's coming off of his first professional loss against Randy Brown.
You're so fine. You blow my mind. Hey, Mickey.
No, you're not. CM Punk. Feed me CM Punk, please. He gets George Sullivan. Mickey Gall, though, this is only his sixth pro fight. Sullivan, this is 24th. You going with experience here, or you think that the kid Mickey Gall is going to be able to get back on track?
Nah, it's Mickey Gall's, man. They've set it up this way, isn't it? Sullivan's the fall guy for Mickey to get back in the win column. That's the matchmaking here, let's be honest. And that's exactly how it's going down. I mean, how old is George Sullivan now, man? He must be pushing 40, right? He's up there in age. I mean, I don't want to threw my back into my fellow oldies, but it's Mickey Gall's, man. This is Mickey Gall's fight.
Yeah, I agree. And Sullivan coming off getting choked.
This is a submission victory. There you go. There's a bold prediction.
No, I would agree with you 100%. I got a second round sub. And then Calderwood. Yeah. What's up, my man? That you're cutting out a little bit. Oh. It seems like we're having some technical difficulties. My man, can you...
I got you. Yeah, can you?
Okay, cool. Awesome. Let me just make sure that we are... Yeah, what is going on here? All right. So now we get to Joanne Calderwood, who will be the featured fight on UFC Fight Pass. She's the -170 favorite against Kalinda Faria, looking for her first UFC win. I think this should be an easy win for Calderwood. Faria is going to try to get the fight to the ground, and I don't think that Calderwood has, you know, the worst ground game in the world. I do think it would probably be in her best interest to avoid it, though. What do you think about your countrywoman, Joanne Calderwood, and her UFC women's flyweight debut?
Yeah, so much has changed since you left here in Scotland to go to TriStar, and then so much has changed again. So it's another chapter in her life, like we were saying at the top of the show. But I mean, looking at her opponent and looking at her records, this looks like kind of not too dissimilar to the Mickey Gall situation. It looks like it's set up for Joanne to take this one. The rumor is that UFC will be returning to Scotland next year. And if Joanne can get the W here, which I suspect she will, I don't really see any problems with her not getting the W. The one thing with Joanne Calderwood, and I hate saying this about, you know, a fellow country person, is she's always susceptible to the submission game. She has so many tools in Muay Thai. You saw her whole toolbox against Valerie Letourneau, for example, spinning this and elbow and knee that, and that's what Joanne's all about. But then you look at look at in the Tough House, for example, or look at fights that she's lost. It's almost always by submission. So that's always been a huge question mark in her career. And what do you do with that? At her stage in the game, she's, you know, in her 30s now. Do you make a point of, okay, I'm all about grappling and jiu-jitsu, or do you just keep going with what brought you to the dance, you know? Maybe back to that Justin Gaethje situation. So I don't see any problems with Joanne here in this fight, certainly looking at her opponent's records and what she's all about. I think what we're looking at here is a solid victory for Joanne. She gets the job done, and then it sets up things nicely for when UFC comes back to her neck of the woods in Scotland and she headlines and potentially maybe bows out on a high.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more on the scope of the fact that the submission game and ground fighting has kind of been her Achilles heel in certain bouts. She has seemed to be more successful in the fights that, you know, are these fight of the nights, kind of like war type of things. Yeah, I mean, the story here is simple. I mean, she's gonna need to pick Faria apart from the outside. And I think if Jessica I can do it, I think Joanne Calderwood can do it. And I think she's going to get the win. Down to our last two, Drew Dober and John Tuck. I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot to really analyze about that. I got Dober all day in this one. John Tuck hasn't fought in millenniums, it seems. Really, like, he hasn't fought in forever. And then we can move on to the last one. Questionable matchmaking for the first fight of the night is Ronnie Yahya and Luke Sanders. Ronnie Yahya is on a little bit of a run. He's 10-3 in the UFC, and Luke Sanders has, you know, lost two of his last three. Obviously, Ronnie Yahya, you know, if he takes you down, you're in trouble. World champion and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I think he's going to submit Cool Hand Luke Sanders in round one, to be honest with you.
And Luke Sanders, how his jiu-jitsu game is, but I seem to remember him getting submitted by Yuri. Was that not the ankle lock or the knee bar or something?
Knee bar, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Aye.
Yeah, so, I mean, do not want to go to the ground with Ronnie Yahya at all.
Fair play, mate.
That is for certain. So now that we have come to the end of this, you want to do these quick predictions and then we'll get out of here?
Let's do it, because I've got a pregnant wife who's calling my name.
For sure, my man.
You don't want to leave that hanging, man. So quick predictions. So I'll just go through the card, or do we do it one at a time? How you want to do it?
Yep, I'll give you the fight. We'll go top to bottom from the main card and then down the prelims. I need a name of the winner, a round, and a method. I have James Vick over Gaethje by round 3 TKO. What do you got?
Well, spot on. That's exactly how I see it going down. It's going to be late, yeah, round 3. James Vick, he's got the momentum, and it's going to be a finish. Yeah, Gaethje's going to get caught coming in for sure. Good shout.
I like Andre Feely to outlast and outpoint Michael Johnson on the outside to a decision. What do you think?
Well, Feely finishes him. Michael Johnson, I'm sorry to say, is getting finished in this one. A round, probably late in the fight, same as Vic. Johnson's just going to go for it. Don't give up, Mikey. Don't give up. And then he gets clocked. Third round.
Round 3 TKO. I have Angela Hill out pointing Courtney Casey by decision.
Yeah. Exact same. Yeah, Angela Hill's unanimous decision for sure.
It was a good run for Jake Ellenberger, but I think his career comes to a halt. First round stoppage for me by TKO for Brian Barberena.
I'm going to go for submission, but yeah, it's going to happen in the first round. Brian Barberena gets it done here. First round submission.
Davidson Figueiredo by decision over John Moraga. You might be taking a smoke break. You might want to just throw a name out there.
Some small guy wins by some technicality. I don't know. I'm away when that fight's happening.
There we go. We got it. Eric Anders knocks out Tim Williams in round one.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I would probably say Eric Anders takes it. I don't know about round one. Maybe decision. I would go with decision victory in this.
Decision, okay. Worley Alves chokes out James Krause in round two.
Oh, yeah. I would say the submission. Is it going to happen? I can see it happening early. I'll go for round one. Worley Alves, yeah, he gets a hold of his neck and Krause just can't handle that.
All right. So round one. I think Corey Sandhagen and Yuri Alcantara has fight of the night written all over. It's going to be back and forth. But I think that the true youth and future prospect of Sandhagen will prevail. I like Sandhagen round three late, very late, TKO.
Man, because I just don't know so much about Corey, but he's a bit of a wild card. I'll stick to what I know. I'll stick to my old boy, Yuri. And let's go for submission. Let's go for submission late, third round.
Andrew Sanchez outlasts Marcus Perez by decision.
Oh, he's going to come out all guns blazing. He's want to, you know, put last year's fight to bed. He'll get the finish in the first round. Andrew Sanchez.
TKO?
TKO Andrew Sanchez, yes.
Joanne Calderwood outpoints Kalindra Faria to a decision.
Are we not doing Mickey Gall? Mickey Gall, Josh Sullivan?
Totally skipped over Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall chokes out George Sullivan in round two.
Yeah, he gets it done in the first 10 seconds. That's it. Over. CM Punk's
10
him.
Seconds. Calderwood by decision over Kalindra Faria.
No, JoJo finishes her. This is Joanne. She's going to go back to bad mofo JoJo. She's going to Muay Thai her up, and it's going to be a bloody mess.
You got
second round? Yeah, second round finish, yeah.
Drew Dober beats John Tuck by decision.
Why not? I know very little about these fighters. Sounds good to me, mate.
And I think Ronnie Yaya gets a hold of Luke Sanders and submits him in round one.
Oh, really? Because I think it may be the other way about. I think Cool Hand Luke might get the submission on Ronnie. Yeah, there you go then. Luke gets his submission in round one.
Oh, wow. Gotcha, man. All right, man. Well, John, my friend, it was a pleasure to have you on today. I know you and I both got to get spent a lot of good time talking about these awesome fights that we got coming up this weekend, and I hope that we can chat more about them whenever they're happening, man. It was good to talk to you like always, bro.
Thank you, brother. Massive, massive respect to you, and a pleasure to have you on. Look forward to doing things on the round table with you soon, brother, and if anyone wants to check us out, Martial Arts Chat, Facebook, Twitter. Really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much.
On Spreaker too, right? That's the hub where you kind of host the podcast.
Spreaker.com is where we're live every Sunday. But you can always download us on iTunes. Just search for Martial Arts Chat and a little guy looks like Mr. Potato Head with a black belt around him. That's us.
Martial Arts Chat Podcast, Potato Head. Give that 5 stars. Give it a subscription. You might hear me on there soon. Thanks again, guys, for joining me and my friend John for this episode. And, you know, life is calling, and we will see you guys later. Thanks again for listening.